Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-. So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
A lot can happen in the next 3 years. Like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans are available for these changing times. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer budget-friendly, flexible coverage for people who are in between jobs or missed open enrollment. The plans last nearly 3 years in some states, with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. So for whatever tomorrow brings, UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans may be for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
Hello, everybody. Welcome to the What Culture Gaming Podcast. I'm your host, Scott Tilford, joined by Rich Hudson.
Hello.
I'm Josh Brown.
Hi.
Now, we finally got synced up on this weird online platform that is the internet, but we can finally talk about all sorts of things next-generation console relating. I kind of want to just dive into your immediate thoughts following the Xbox showcase, because you guys weren't on the live thing that me and Kirsten did. But where are you guys sitting in regards to next-generation expectations and hype? We should start with Rich.
The games looked interesting, I guess, as a starting lineup. I'm not surprised that a lot of it is like, yes, this is the next big thing from a studio that's not very big and no one's really going to care about these games in a year's time. But they did look very nice. I am, of course, more interested to see where they go with the hardware side, which obviously I'm not surprised they didn't show. I thought they might have teased something a little bit during the presentation. But the games look interesting, I'll say.
Josh, were you freaking out? I actually quite like the look of that Bright Memory Infinite thing that they opened with, which has now been confirmed as gameplay. But other than that, that was one of the only games that visually sort of like blew me away.
Yeah, it was a weird one, and I think I kind of benefited from following the rumors and the kind of, you know, predictions going into the event, because a lot of people were saying, look, this isn't going to be an E3 style big blowout. It's going to be more of a little teaser of things to come. So I wasn't expecting to see like a bunch of first party stuff, but I was surprised at the kind of variety on show, and I thought a lot of them, a lot of the games, for as, you know, indie focused or whatever as they were, looked really interesting, looked really unique. I expected to see a lot of kind of sequels or more footage from games that we already knew existed, so I was quite pleasantly surprised that we saw a lot of new stuff, and the stuff itself looked interesting. It sucks that we didn't get as much gameplay as you know, we probably wanted to see, but as a kind of taster of what Microsoft is doing with the next generation, I thought it was very promising. I thought they've made a lot of cool moves with this announcement, and they've courted a lot of really talented developers.
Where did you guys come down on the gameplay stuff? Because like watching it live, I don't know if I'm just in the minority, but I was totally satisfied with it, and I classed it as, I know what people mean when they were like, okay, it's not a game being played, but it is in engine. Like, I kind of come down on the fact of like, okay, this is approximating what gameplay is going to look like, and I was mostly satisfied with that. But I saw like most of the internet freak out, and just like, you know, I get the criticism too, but where were you guys on that?
I think the fact that they very much openly said, we've heard the internet before that we're going to do outright gameplay today, and then a couple of the games, especially the big one at the end,
Assassin's Creed was nothing,
clearly wasn't gameplay. I mean, yeah, the getting the in-engine stuff is fine, but people want to, it's not so much that people want to see how it looks within the game as much as that was kind of what was implied with the whole Series X thing, because it's the next step in graphics. People just want to see how the games will play, how they might look. So like when you've got your hands on it. So I think that, you know, what was it, 60% of it was pure gameplay. The rest of it, I think, was justified that people were a bit like, oh, I'm not sure about this. Like, even looking at the official like offline reveals of the gameplay trailer that Ubisoft released, there's a lot of backlash on it saying this literally isn't gameplay. If you say gameplay to somebody, you expect to see, you know, first or third person, HUD everywhere. Like, this is what the game will look like when it's on your screen, not just this is gameplay that we've taken the camera out and we've put it somewhere else to show you how it looks from a distance. People want to see it behind the eyes or behind the person of the person to be playing as, rather than just a representation of it. Even if it is running an engine, even if it's like, yes, this is exactly how it will look, we want to see it as we will see it.
Yeah, you want something more controlled. And that's what you were going to say, Josh.
Yeah, I fully agree with you too. I feel like, especially after years and years and generations of not, of kind of being fooled by vertical slices, you know, we're always promised the world when it comes to the next gen stuff. And then we realize that it was probably never feasible. Obviously, you know, big hitters like Watch Dogs kind of proved that we should never fully trust gameplay that we see. So I think it's kind of justified that people are a bit annoyed that we didn't see, you know, what the game will actually play as. Like Rich said there, we saw an approximation of it, or we saw in-engine stuff that's still being manipulated. That's cool. That's cool for building hype. But I don't know. It's one of, I think it's just compounded by the fact that we've seen so little from these machines so far, and so little from the games in general, that you did want something a little bit more, especially with Assassin's Creed, because we just got the big CG trailer last week. You'd expect, at least I expected, an actual, you know, slice of gameplay as it's going to be when you finally get it in your hands. But what we got was, you know, still something kind of different. It'll look cool, but it's all down to kind of, you know, tempering expectations and kind of living up to what you've said and what you've communicated and stuff like that.
Mm-hmm. In regards to like the look of stuff as well, do you think that, because basically there's a piece doing the rounds at the minute about how like diminishing returns and centering on the idea of like how much better can graphics get and things like that, and the idea that, you know, we're never going to be blown away the same way that we were when we first saw like the PS2's graphics or even the PS3 to some degree. Where do you guys come down on that like with each new hardware cycle going forward, it's going to be increasingly diminishing returns? Do you think that is the case, or that they still have other things to show off?
I couldn't disagree more with that, to be honest. Every time I see an argument like this, it reminds me of like when the last generation was ending, and it was slightly different, but people were saying very similar things. And they were also saying like, you know, oh, console gaming is going to go away. Mobile's the future and stuff. I feel like when we wind down a generation, there's always kind of that like fear of, well, do we even need a new one? Where can we go from here? But I think like just the gradual sort of leap in technology has proven that there's always somewhere to go. You look at games from 2013 that were launch titles for the PlayStation 4, the Xbox One, and you look at games launching at the very final tail end of those machines, and there's still a radical jump, and that was on comparatively underpowered machines. I just know there was a time where we looked at The Rock in The Mummy Returns, right, and we thought, it doesn't get better than this. This is the peak of CG imagery. Uh-huh. And of course, we look back on that now and think, that's bad. That's not very
it's
good.
True. I just,
it looks like a potato.
Things like, because it's true, like, yeah, those conversations do come around so much, but even back then, you know, we were looking at, like, you know, like one voxel with a whole face, like, plastered on the front on a PS1. It was, oh my God, it's 3D for the first time. And there was clearly, like, some ways to go before you got photoreal. And obviously Last of Us 2, Red Dead Redemption 2, like whatever, those games are absolutely gorgeous. They're not photoreal yet, so maybe that's as far as we can go. But Rich, what do you think?
Well, that's the thing. I agree with what Josh was saying about, you know, the wind down of the generation. It's like, do we need this anymore? Like when they were saying, when they finally revealed the Series X and they revealed the PS5 and they were like, look, here they are, and people went, well, we don't want them. Everything's fine. When you look at the generational jumps between, we'll start the PS1 with 3D stuff all the way through to now, every time the generations ticked over, the main thing they show off is like, look at how many polygons we can have on screen. Mm-hmm. Look at when they revealed the GameCube, they did the demo with like 100 Marios stood on top of the GameCube, and you can manipulate them and mess around with them as much as you like. Those were the numbers that they would push forward. And especially going into this generation, you know, typically the PC stuff is like, okay, we're here, and now it's finally dripping down to the consoles. It's the RTX stuff, the ray tracing things, because in reality, the models and the stuff, yes, they will get better in-game because there's more power behind it all, but the main draw of this new generation, especially when you look back at those gameplay trailers of that were shown last week, you see the lighting and how that has evolved and how that's changed to make stuff look more photoreal. You look at things like, as you said, Last of Us and Red Dead 2, like Red Dead 2 especially has got some of the most beautiful skyboxes and amazing lighting, and they're the things that finally make a game look really good. That's why you can take a game from 2004, you can take something like Half-Life 2, which is gorgeous in itself and it's vanilla form, but you give it that extra bit of heft in terms of lighting and shade, and you can make it look like a game that came out on the Xbox One. Mm-hmm. Like that's the next big jump. They keep talking about ray tracing, and you just get those side by sides. That's really all we're getting in this big upgrade, but it's not something feasible on current gen. Mm-hmm. So yeah, that's the next big jump. But obviously, it is being cited a lot, but you're not seeing it as much as like, look at how many polygons we can put on Nathan Drake's nose. Like that's how it was going into like the PS3 and into the PS4. This time it's just like, look, we can basically take what we've got. You take something like God of War, which is stunning, but we can now polish it even further than you ever expected. That's the next big graphics jump. So I don't think we have hit the top yet, but this is getting pretty damn close.
I think that's a great point in that, you know, it's so easy to look at the jump from the PlayStation 1 to the PlayStation 2 and look at the broad strokes, look at the detail in the character models, look at the detail in the environment and sort of see the jump. And like Rich said there, I think in terms of those bigger things, we kind of, we've not reached a peak, but we've certainly got to a point where we're not as impressed by the jumps from, like Rich said, you know, the amount of polygons that make up Nathan Drake's ear cartilage or something like that. But I do think there's a lot of room for improvement in the subtler kind of details, whether it's like the animations or the lighting or the particle effects. Those things that you don't necessarily see in side-by-sides, but add a huge amount to the overall feel of a game, at least for me. Like the first time I saw Uncharted 4, when Nathan Drake kind of swoops the rope around the tree, the winch, sorry, on the, right. on the car, and that's all done in real time. I thought that was such a mind blowing.
I think you texted me about that, freaking out. You should see this rope, mate. Like, yeah.
I don't even think I was working for the site full time then. I was just like, I've got to talk to someone about this. I'm going to have to message Scott. But like, it's those subtler details that add up to create a real big jump that I think are being focused on now. And that's what we're going to appreciate kind of going forward. And I don't think it's something that is going to look radically different on side-by-side screenshots, but when we see it in motion and we look back on the PlayStation 4 games, we'll think, oh, how did we ever, you know, not appreciate this? How did we ever sort of live without these small tweaks? Because to me, they are like important. And I think we do them a bit of a disservice by only focusing on, you know, the raw power or the amount of polygons or whatever.
I was going to say as well, like the something that I think kind of comes up like a lot is crunch and the idea that, you know, these massive games that are just absolutely dripping in detail and opulence and quality, and, you know, like something like a Rockstar or Naughty Dog's games, they so far have been singled out in terms of, I mean, Activision are a Kotaku report in waiting, but it feels like, you know, like to get something that as hyper detailed as The Last of Us 2 or Red Dead 2 takes this insane human cost, like over the course of multiple years and massive like 14-hour days and things like that. The thing that kind of counterbalances that is that new game that they showed as part of the Series X showcase, the Bright Memory Infinite, which is made by one person. I don't know how long it took that one person, but that idea that, you know, that level of quality is associated with work practices that can't last. Where do you guys come down on that? Do you think that is the case, or do you think that over time it'll get easier to be able to deliver those really over the top, like, you know, will something like a Red Dead 2 become more of the norm?
I think it will, because the Sony haven't been great over the past few months at kind of communicating why the PS5 is so good. But they've been very focused on how it's good for developers and how they've changed the architecture of the machine to make like these hyper-detailed, massive worlds possible. Like the changes in the loading times, for instance, and the amount of actual assets that can be read and displayed on screen, like the way they've changed that just kind of fundamentally frees up how these worlds are created. Because before, you get the sense that a game like Red Dead 2 takes so much time, not only because it's so intricately detailed, but because they're working against so many limitations trying to stop that from being possible. Where it's at least I hope, with the introduction of like this SSD and the new architecture and stuff, that they will remove those limitations and kind of make development easier and kind of more accessible, and hopefully lessen the amount of, you know, overwhelming work it takes to get something that seems relatively easy to work. Because you look at like the Frostbite engine, which seems like an absolute nightmare for everyone to work on, you know what I mean? Apparently it's not built for purpose. It takes... Unless it's a shooter, but if you're making like the BioWare games, you know what I mean? Open world, third-person RPGs, it's just not... It doesn't accommodate that very well, so you're almost fighting an uphill battle. I think if you manage to solve those big problems on a game engine side, it will hopefully make, you know, development easier and better and smoother. But that might be wishful thinking. I don't know. Crunch isn't just going to go away because there's new machines, but hopefully.
Yeah, like, I remember when the Unreal Engine became free, and it was like, all of a sudden you saw this big uptick in the general sort of visual quality of indie games, and the idea that you can, you know, like the rising tide like raises all ships and stuff. But I mean, Rich, where'd you come down on that idea of, or that assumption? Because like, you know way more about the hardware side than I think me and Josh do.
Yeah.
So like, does it seem like a feasible thing for nearly every other game to be a Last of Us 2 or a Red Dead 2?
I think it might be. Like I said, the general, like, as I said, like, the polygon stuff will increase and so on and so forth, but it's more that what you can do within in the engine, real-time rendering, and how it will visually look with, like, almost like filters, basically. That's kind of where we go from here. And I think it was in at the beginning of the Xbox showcase. As corny as it sounds, they said we're powering dreams here, which sounds it sounds so corny and so cringy, but to an extent they're not wrong. They have given this huge amount of headroom to go and do things. I've already mentioned God of War, and I think didn't Corey Barlog try and get the whole single shot thing going on the PS2 or the PS3?
Yeah,
it's like just with the hardware, we can't do this. And then the PS4 turned up and it's like, okay, maybe we can. With something like the PS5 or the Series X, they will have even more headroom to do that. And when you look at something like Hellblade, like Ninja Theory's game, that, you know, they're not a massive studio, but they made something that you could stick up alongside The Last of Us, God of War, Red Dead 2 in terms of visual fidelity, because they took the hardware they had and they really boiled it down to work out like the best way to use it. If they're given that amount of headroom going in with Senua's Saga, Hellblade 2, then It should be relatively easy. Obviously, I don't know masses about like programming and development really, but if they're given that amount of headroom, even if they don't use it all, then that's going to make life easier for them. So the idea that less people could make something looking as good as that, like if you really dig into the indie space, which I know Scott does a lot, there are some incredibly good looking games made by smaller teams. So sometimes it makes me look at something like The Last of Us 2 and think, okay, so whereabouts in the whole development cycle is this crunch coming? Is it coming in the programming department? Is it coming in the art department? Is it coming somewhere else? Because how have other smaller studios managed this? Obviously, I know there's the idea that there's a lot more sort of publisher pressure coming on top of these studios, which I completely understand. But sometimes it's like, okay, so where is this coming from? Is this just office-wide? Let's just stress the hell out for the next couple of months. But I think it's definitely feasible for smaller developers to make some really good looking games. As I said, stuff like Hellblade is a testament to we can make something AAA that we're basically not a AAA studio.
Yeah, that's a like really good example. Yeah, I mean, that whole thing with Ninja Theory saying that they were setting out to make a AAA looking game on a AA budget or whatever it was, like on an indie budget, and that it is more like a case of maybe just better planning from the studios. Obviously, there's going to be hiccups and roadblocks and humps or whatever they're going to get in the way. But Josh, are you going to dive in and say something there?
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-. So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.
This podcast is brought to you by Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. And Indeed doesn't just help you hire faster. 93% of employers agree Indeed delivers the highest quality matches compared to other job sites, according to a recent Indeed survey. One of the things I love about Indeed is that it just makes hiring all in one place so easy, because you just get unparalleled access to job seekers. Plus, listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/WCG. Just go to Indeed.com/WCG right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/WCG. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
I was going to say, you know, like I fully agree with what you guys are saying. And I think it's just that a lot of the difficulties when it comes to getting games to work and game development are sort of things that we don't even notice, or we just take for granted, or we assume are easy. Like I was doing a list on Red Dead Redemption, the original, a few months ago about things that you didn't know about the game. And there is this great quote from the actors who worked on the original title saying that when they recorded scenes in mocap, in 2010, they didn't have the ability to make cuts in the while they were shooting. So if they messed up a scene, they had to go back and do it all again. They could literally only do it in one take. And then you had to cut from inside the game. So if that's like as early as 2010, if you couldn't even have multiple different angles and multiple different cuts, it's amazing how these games are stitched together that you don't notice these limitations. So hopefully going forward, you might not notice those. We might not even notice those limitations have been lifted, but the fact that they have will hopefully make, you know, the idea of making these hugely detailed, ambitious games more feasible, not only for the big studios, but like you said, for the indies out there, for the 10-man team, or you know, the team of, you know, two people or whatever. Just
the one guy.
By lifting those invisible barriers that most players don't even know about, should hopefully make, like Rich said, this dream more feasible or whatever.
There's a couple of things that like blew me away recently. Like one was Resident Evil 3, like obviously coming out 1 year after RE2. And I know that there are some reused assets in there, but they still built all this really gorgeous 4K environment work. And assumedly environment stuff is easier to do than, you know, acting performances and stuff like that. But like, that was something that I was like, man, this is a hell of a quick turnaround, considering that we just had RE2. And Death Stranding as well. Like, there hasn't been any sort of reports as to, you know, long crunch hours and stuff at Kojima Productions. But and Kojima put out his full timeline of how he went from nothing to full Death Stranding, and I think it was about 3 years, maybe 4 years. But that as well, going, you know, as long as you manage things correctly, there is a way to do this. And maybe the problem is more related to planning and scheduling than it is with just the impossibility of just that level of detail. And we should talk about the SSD, because the PS5, the solid state drive, I don't know what the Xbox Series X's hard drive or solid state drive thing is, but Sony are championing an SSD. And the conversations that come alongside that are that they'll change the way games are even made, that the idea of loading times will just go away. And you'll get to say goodbye to the thing that I hate, which is character turns to the side and like awkwardly goes through a crevice because the game's loading the next thing. Where do you guys come down on that stuff? Is it like something that on a pure hardware side you're looking forward to like seeing? Because I think that would be something that would blow me away in terms of, you know, this is the next generation of gaming. This is a fundamental change. Like, are you yearning for stuff like that to come along?
Well, as the PC community was saying, when after Mark Cerny did his lovely long speech, welcome to 2010, guys.
Hey, we've been waiting.
But seriously, SSDs make such a difference. Back when I was playing PUBG, that game was so badly optimized for hard drives, it would barely ever load. I don't know whether when you guys were playing PUBG on your Xboxes and your PlayStations, whether you had the old low poly buildings when you were landing and there were still things to load in. That was basically how bad it was on a hard drive. You stuck it on an SSD, no problem. In fact, that was the reason why I got a storage SSD for my PC, was to play PUBG without it being rubbish. So there is a definite upgrade to it. I think there's a lot of sort of technical mumbo jumbo and a lot of bloating in the whole grand scheme of this is how much of a difference it'll make. The fact that Mark Cerny could sit and talk for like 40 minutes about one SSD, about loads of random crap that no one really cared about. It's like, yes, it's an SSD. Welcome to 2010 again. Mm-hmm. But in the grand scheme of things, yeah, it's going to be such a great push forward to for console gamers. Not like it's impossible now. I think I said this on a news I think we did a while ago, that it is possible to put an SSD in a PC, a PS4 and Xbox One now. It's not that hard.
Right.
Obviously they're not going to be built from the ground up with SSDs in mind. I think that's more what they're referring to when they're talking about how good it's going to be. But it will improve load times generally on a current console.
The thing that I'm curious about is like, yeah, it completely eliminates or improves loading times. But like at the same way, I guess because consoles have finally caught up with PCs and SSDs, does that change the general design philosophies that go into the majority of video games? Because the vast majority are still made for consoles or with a console mindset, you know, when it comes to marketability and all the game mechanics and things like that. Like, I don't know if that's just something that, like, to me, that idea is awesome. Like, that's something I'm really actually, like, looking forward to. But, like, yeah, Josh, what do you think of the general split between or bringing in SSDs and how that might change things?
I'm a big fan. I remember the PlayStation 4 announcing it was going to have that suspend feature and thinking, it's not that big of a deal. But now, going back to, like, the Xbox 360, I couldn't imagine living without being able to boot up a game and just getting back to where I finished off the night before. But I do think what you mentioned there is kind of the biggest thing I'm looking forward to, the fact that, you know, now this SSD or whatever is going to be kind of standardized, and then the kind of like lowest rung machines will be able to benefit from them. That should free up how developers actually approach the games, because like Rich said, you know, like this this technology isn't anything new, but the fact that it's going to be standardized across the board now means that, you know, developers don't have to accommodate for the weakest hardware that don't have it, you know what I mean? Because it should open the playing field. And I think it was in that Mark Cerny talk, the last big boring one that he did, where he mentioned just the fact that it will change how developers approach level design. He was talking about how now they're built from like corridors and stuff and things that hide the load times. Like you said, sometimes it's so egregious where you have to literally shimmy through a wall Tomb Raider style while the level loads in the background. But it's happening on a much subtler level as well in the way that they're actually designed. So you're moving through corridors. We talk a lot about kind of corridor shooters and stuff. And while that is, you know, kind of a staple of design, it's also there out of necessity as well, because you simply can't render that many, you know, things within view or whatever while keeping the detail up. But if what you're saying kind of like comes true and the developers really can harness that power and fundamentally change the way that you navigate environments or the way that environments are displayed or the way that things are rendered like around you, that is so exciting and something you can't just kind of show off with a gameplay trailer or something. It's something that you'll only notice when you're actually playing the games. Mm-hmm. And you get the feeling that, you know, when this becomes normalized, you'll go back to a game, even a game as good as, you know, like Horizon or whatever, and realize the things that were holding it back, the limitations in the level design, the limitations in the quest design and stuff that had to accommodate for this very specific style of rendering environments and stuff. So that's the thing that I'm hoping, because I'm not entirely sold on it yet, but if they can fulfill that potential, that's what I'm hoping will be a real game changer.
That's the thing that I'm looking forward to the most. Is I remember at the start of this, the current generation, when the PS4 and Xbox One came out, and there was so many conversations around, okay, like which of these games could you fundamentally not do on the last generation of hardware? You know, especially when in the PS3's case, we just ended with, you know, GTA 5 and The Last of Us, and then the first couple of years of the PS4 Xbox One stuff, there was nothing that felt like it fundamentally couldn't have been done, you know, in terms of design wise. But that's the thing, if you nail that stuff where you're fundamentally getting rid of, like you said, those weird awkward loads or corridor sections, or you just make something feel that much more immediate, load times are all but eliminated, then absolutely those older consoles wouldn't be able to do it, and that might be the best way to impress like a mass audience. Because yeah, I mean, like Rich, you said that this stuff came in like 2010. Did you notice any sort of developers playing into it, or do you feel like the PC space has been waiting for consoles to sort of catch up?
It's sort of that, yeah. Usually when because obviously PCs don't have generational gaps, you can only really see it when games release, because obviously where we are with some console games, obviously there are a lot of multi-platform games that do look at PC and see it as almost a separate platform to play on, rather than just say we're releasing it for the big three and just leaving it at that. We're sort of waiting on everyone else to sort of catch up. But kind of what I meant before about the sort of the ceiling being raised, I think that's the same thing with the SSD, because obviously there are games in the past, I keep citing God of War, but again, you can like almost walk through the entirety of that game without hitting a loading screen. And the same with open world games. It's just sort of not everyone has worked out the best way to work their way around that. Hence why you've got things like Tomb Raider doing the old narrow shimmy and stuff like that. But if you put the SSD in there and it opens the floor, it's like, okay, now more people can do it. So it is true to say that more developers can seize that technology, seize that power and use it to their own advantage. But yeah, you don't see it as much with PC games unless it is like an outright PC game and saying, look, this is how we're going to use the hardware. But there's not, obviously with PCs being completely freeform as to how you want to build it, not everyone will have an SSD. It's kind of a standard now, but you don't have to. There's nothing in the process of building a PC where you need an SSD. So there's not many games that will say, please put this on an SSD or else it's not going to work. Whereas with the sort of the beauty of that sort of, I say beauty, of the lockdown hardware you have, not so much to me, but to some people, yeah, the beauty of the lockdown hardware you have on a console, it means they can outrightly use the harness and SSD, unless somebody decides, I know what, I'm going to take the SSD out and put a hard drive in. Don't know why you do that, but
thing that I'm curious about, because like I like the idea of, like you said, the SSD becoming normalized, becoming standardized, and then you get all these different dev teams that know everyone's going to have access to this stuff. And the thing that throws all that out of whack is, I guess, Microsoft's plans to make everything backwards compatible with the Xbox One for the first couple of years or 3 or 4 years. I know they mentioned some statistic about everything that comes out on Series X will also work on Xbox One. I think as far as Halo Infinite, there's not any Series X exclusives. But I mean, even that is, you know, assumedly the PS5 obviously has the SSD, and then we don't know what the Xbox hardware stats are. But I just think it's interesting. As a final sort of open question, I was going to ask what you guys, just complete open goal, whatever you want. What do you want from the next generation of consoles? Is it, you know, a wider variety of genres? Is it like the hardware side of it? Do you want more of the same? What do you think?
Ooh, I don't know. It feels kind of weird because we're so spoiled at the moment that, you know, I'm quite content with the kind of games we're getting. I do want to see more freedom from the developers to create more immersive and unique worlds rather than having everything follow a similar formula. I finally want to get rid of, you know, the pretend corridors that are, you know, dolled up to not look like corridors. I think Call of Duty World War II was one of the worst ones for that recently, whereas I quite like the campaign, but even though you were in these apparently open-ended battlefields, you were very much going through, you know, a one-way street. So I want them to kind of free themselves from the shackles of that. But ultimately, I think we've hit a good run over the past few years. The generation, in my opinion, got off to quite a wonky start. But now Microsoft is kind of like back in full force. I think they made a lot of right moves. And if Sony can continue to capitalize on the great exclusives they've cultivated over the past few years, I think we could be looking into an interesting and exciting future where I don't know which console I'm going to have to buy first, because I'm really scared, guys. They're going to be expensive machines.
Just trade everything in. We've matched like so many generations of titles. I kind of want to see like a return, like I mentioned genres before. I feel like this generation, because obviously the industry's gotten bigger than ever, I feel like so many big teams just sort of fell back on lots of formulas. Like control schemes seem uniform based on the genre. Like nearly every first-person shooter controls the same, you know, nearly every sort of cover shooter controls the same, and like that's it. You've sort of got, you know, open world action RPG, first person shooter, third person cover shooter, and I want a wider variety of genres to come back. I want extreme sports games to come back, or arcade racing, or things like that. Rich, we need Split Second 2, and we've been waiting too long.
I was gonna say arcade races are what I miss as much as we still have Mario Kart and Crash Team Racing, which basically kind of like arcade races. They're kind of on the periphery, but yeah, we need more arcade races, and it's a shame that stuff has tried, like Onrush for the PS4, as fun as it was for the 5 minutes playing it, to think, yep, that's 5 minutes of the game, that's all it is, and that was it. Arcade races need to come back. I mean, you know, there's kind of like Dirt 5,
yep,
was announced, which is, I've always seen Dirt as less of like a Forza and more like an arcade racer. It's kind of in the middle. Like, you've got stuff like that, but yeah, the arcade races want to come back. As for like a general overall thing, it's less of a game game design decision thing. It's more of a publishing decision. If there's something that you've, a game that's being released on multiple platforms, don't try and make one of them to be the definitive one on just one platform to satisfy the pockets when Sony or Microsoft chuck however much money at you. And like, it's Call of Duty Modern Warfare that's the worst for this at the moment. It's almost like the only one that's doing it.
Right.
With the likes of the survival mode for Modern Warfare that, you know, those of us on PC and Xbox won't be getting till October this year.
Right.
And they did something else recently that was exclusive on PS4 first. Oh, the Modern Warfare 2 remaster.
Yes.
Stuff like that. Just console exclusivity for a series or a franchise or just a game that isn't necessarily going to be specific to a platform. Stop trying to make it specific to a platform, because all you're doing is alienating a huge portion of your consumer base. Mm-hmm. It doesn't make any sense, and no one seems to like it. All it does is further fuel that really toxic fanboy mindset, which you still see when everyone was kicking off about the Modern Warfare survival mode not being available at all on Xbox and PC, and then you had all these people saying, "Oh, this is really annoying," and you know, we were quite annoyed about it, and then you just get people saying, "That's why PlayStation's the best." It's like, can we like that boils down? There's a lot of that sort of mindset that's just come from the player level that we had during the 360 PS3 days. That's relatively all but gone. The only reason we see it is because it's dripping down from the top. So publishers, stop doing that.
I think that stuff is, it can be fun in like a sports team kind of way, but it's just, yeah, the toxic side of it can get absolutely stuffed. Like, even when all the Last of Us 2 stuff was kicking off, and there was like this little sect of Xbox people being like, "Well, you know, I'm glad that happened. I'm glad that one of these."
It's like when they announced Horizon for PC and all those PS4 players started like throwing their consoles out of windows and things. I'm like, it's just being released on a different platform. That's the big deal.
maybe in a long enough timeline, we'll all get more smooth over, we'll all calm down.
Hopefully.
But I doubt it.
It's better than it used to be.
Yes, it's definitely better than it used to be. But yeah, head over to Twitter. You can use the hashtag WCGP to leave us different thoughts and comments and questions, and we'll get to them in a future question pod. For now, though, this has been the What Culture Gaming Podcast. I've been your host, Scott Taylor, joined by Rich Hudson.
Thank you for listening to me ramble about things.
And Josh Brown.
Goodbye.
We'll catch you next time. Bye. Bye.
A lot can happen in the next 3 years. Like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans are available for these changing times. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer budget-friendly, flexible coverage for people who are in between jobs or missed open enrollment. The plans last nearly 3 years in some states, with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. So for whatever tomorrow brings, UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans may be for you. Learn more at uh1.com. A lot can happen in 3 years, like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage that lasts nearly 3 years in some states. Learn more at uh1.com.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.